You're listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. There have been two items in the news that got my attention. And they're both on Obamacare. One is the number of people that are actually enrolling. There have been stories both in the Wall Street Journal and in the Washington Post. And the Washington Post confirming the number that the Wall Street Journal was coming out with, that the healthcare.gov site has actually enrolled. Now, remember, it went live 1 October, so it's a little over 40 days. Going on 6 weeks, enrolled as a total of 50,000 people. Now, there's something interesting about that number. How would you, I used to be in the insurance business and used to sell both individual and group health insurance. I would consider someone enrolled is when the policy or the insurance plan was actually issued and the client had paid the money. And usually we would get the money up front, and you go to underwriting, and then usually within a period of time, anywhere from 2 weeks to 30 days, typically, depending on the size of the group, we'd get back the okay, and then I would meet with the client, usually hand out cards for the employees, insurance cards that they have carriers with, as well as provide other information to the business owner. And if it was an individual, I would do the same thing. Now, not that involved. But the key thing is enrollment, as it's used and thought of by most people, is you've paid for and have the insurance. You've made a payment. And if you're buying something online, you know, I think the most common experience, and I've certainly taken advantage of this, is I at least in the past, not recently, but in the past, I would buy books from Amazon, and I would pay for it. They want the money up front, and I would get it within typically a few days or a week, depending on how pressed I was for the material. Or I would go to other websites, the same thing. So the key thing here is an order, and that's what these orders have to be paid for, and you indicate what you want, and then it's shipped to you. And the insurance, well, there's nothing to ship except the identification cards that either the individual, his family members, or if he's working for a small business, I would give the employees a card. And everyone understood at that point they had insurance. And most clients are, when they apply, they want it turned around as quickly as possible. So did I, because I don't get paid until that insurance is issued, because I was a salesman for insurance. I was a licensed insurance agent, and I worked strictly on commissions. And that's built into the price, and everyone knows it. You need someone that goes out, looks for the business, sits down with typically the business owner, was the majority of the people I were talking to, and usually that could be one or two people. We would talk, they would tell me what they had or what they didn't have, what they were looking for, what type of coverage, what kind of deductible, copay. That was the standard situation. Now, a lot of this was done prior to the internet, and while the internet has enabled people to buy certain goods and services cheaply, well, let's talk about that for a minute. I know a lot of you probably have used Amazon just like I have, but is Amazon really the best place to go if you want inexpensive books to buy? Well, I happen to live in Dallas, and people that have lived in Dallas or the Texas area are familiar with Half-Price Books. Now, I don't work for them, but I'm going to give them a plug. What I do today, because I'm on a limited budget, is I will look for sales and or books that are heavily discounted. Now, what do I mean by heavily discounted? A dollar. If you've ever gone to Half-Price Books, they have sections of the store where you can buy books for a dollar or $3. And I usually wait until they're a dollar. And I also usually have coupons that save me an additional 15 cents. So a book that could easily cost $25, $30, as much as $50 or $100, I have bought for a dollar. I was in the bookstore this Sunday and got a dictionary. Well, not a dictionary. What is it called? A dictionary. Yes, it's a dictionary. But this is a dictionary of bibliographies of people, and it has over 18,000. I got that for a dollar. I could have gone to Amazon and probably paid $60, $70 for it, and they had it shipped in a brand new mint condition. But I wouldn't have bought it for $60. The only reason why I bought it was because it was a dollar. And there are several books like that. So if you're truly a shopper and you're looking for any good at affordable price, you're going to spend some time shopping. And many times you're simply not going to find the books you're looking for. Also, many times I find books that I am looking for. And even if I, let's say there's a book I really, really need. At half price book, it's usually less than half the price of the book on its cover. And I would say most of the time it's typically about 30%. Even though they say half price books, it's at least that or less. Now, why am I getting into this? On occasion, I would go to Amazon or some other site, start to shop for some items, and for whatever reason decide to not go to the checkout. I'll have goods in my shopping cart. Now, I might return to Amazon the next day. I usually don't. If I'm interested in something, and usually it's a book that I have to have for whatever reason. Many times it's because I was taking a college course and needed a book in a hurry. But even then, Amazon, especially if it was computer-related, were not the best place to go. There actually are bookstores in Dallas that specialize in computer technology, books, programming, applications. There's one I haven't been there in years, but someone reminded me of that because he was taking a course, and I actually bought a book that he bought at this other place, and he got it cheaper. Now, I totally forgot about that place, and I'm glad he reminded me because I had to get a book that I hate paying full or near full price, and that's what you pay with Amazon, even with the so-called free shipping. Now, I'm bringing this point up because I want to relate it to what counts as enrolled in Obamacare, in an Obamacare plan. You would think, and I initially thought, well, that means people have paid for at least a month's premium up front and now have gotten a copy of the policy together with their identification cards that they have the coverage with an insurance carrier. Ladies and gentlemen, that's not entirely true. Why? They are counting people that have abandoned their shopping carts, that have put a plan in a shopping cart but never completed the order. And the theory being, well, they'll come back, and when they do, it's there, and then they'll pay for it. My experience, I almost never come back. Now, there's some people that will use the shopping cart to, if they see items that they might in a distant future buy, and I'm talking months or years, they buy things that they're dreaming about, but they can't afford. But in the 50,000 number, and I don't know what percent, because they're not disclosing it. And remember, this is 50,000 for the healthcare.gov website. So some of those, I don't know if it's 5%, 10%, I have no idea. And they're not breaking it out. The fact that you have to include and do include that situation in your numbers, you're desperate. You have a terrifically low enrollment. Now, what they're trying to do, or the spin is, they're comparing it with the situation in Massachusetts that was very, very low in the initial months when so-called Romney Care was rolled out in Massachusetts. Remember, that's a state plan that covered less than 3% of the people. And yes, as the deadline approached, that required people to get the plan, you had an increase in enrollments. I would expect that. I would assume that the numbers are going to go up. But what I'm reading about is to make this work, they need at least 7 million people to sign up by the end of next year. And by March, they need 3 million. Well, so you have through November, December, January, February, March. You got 4 months, a little over 4 months, to add 3 million people, or 3 million people less 50,000. In other words, you're going to have to add quite a few people. And the problem is the website is still not fixed. And before I forget, some students have asked me, what should I do? And my answer is, are you healthy? I like to ask questions. Are you healthy? Yes, I'm healthy. You have no problems, health condition? No. Been healthy, seldom go to the doctor. I said, well, do you have a job? Some do, some don't. Many have part-time if they have that. I said, I'd do nothing. Because actuarially, the probability of you needing medical care, go to a doctor or need an operation or some procedure, is very, very low. And most young people's health needs, I was thinking when I was young and on my own in college and grad school and even in the Air Force, I'm not saying I never saw a doctor, but it was rare. I think the one thing that I needed some assistance, medical assistance, is I injured my knee several times, once playing tennis, once playing, not playing, but doing judo, which I never really finished because the orthopedic surgeon, and this was a flight surgeon in the Air Force, said, I think I was a lieutenant then, Lieutenant Pronk, I have good news and bad news. The bad news is you really shouldn't engage in strenuous exercise anymore because if you do, you're going to injure your knee. And see, I, at that time, enjoyed playing tennis. A little bit later, I like to ski. And I was initially in the early stages of being active in judo. Well, I said, forget about judo. And the same thing with tennis. Now, several years later, after I got out of the Air Force, I went skiing several times. But guess what happened one time I skied? I re-injured my knee again. So I was taking a calculated risk. It wasn't serious, but it really hurt for a while. And what the doctor said, and I paid it out of my pocket, is you're probably going to have rheumatism, arthritis as you get older. And that knee has bothered me, especially when it gets very, very cold. But other than that, and some minor calls, ear, occasionally I would get an infection in my ear, and I'm knocking wood here, I've had very, very, very little need for medical assistance. And I think if you added it all up, at most a couple of $1,000s, and that's probably high. Now, what I'm not counting is dental and vision. Because most people, or at least me, I didn't so much need a good health insurance policy. I needed good dental coverage and eye care coverage because that's where I spent the most money. So if you're thinking about, well, what should I do? What is the process? That's what you need to think about because you probably will not need a doctor. Now, after saying all this, what I say to everybody, if you can afford it, if you're making a good income and it's a concern of yours, especially if it's offered through work, and many times it was when I was working for a very large company or the Air Force, it's part of the package. When I was in the Air Force, I would go to the Air Force hospital on base. And when I was working for a Fortune 500 company, I had a good health insurance plan. But I didn't run up any major bills. I was probably one they're glad they have. It's either I had no claims or very small claims, and like most plans have a deductible, most of what I was paying was out of my pocket. I would almost say literally all of it was, because most health insurance plans have deductibles. And because my bills were so few and far between, I never would exceed the deductible. Many times I would never even get into the copay region at all, because most of my care were doctor visits. You know, I really had no therapy, nothing like that. Now, why am I going into this? Many of you today have to make a decision, especially if you're young. What should I do? First of all, you're not required, no matter what anyone tells you, you're not required to buy health insurance. The Supreme Court made it very, very clear. The federal government cannot force you to buy health insurance. So the health insurance police are not going to come knocking on your door or pulling you over, your car over, and say, "Show me your insurance policy card." It's never going to happen, folks. So don't get panicked about it. See, a lot of people get very, especially if they worked all their lives for big companies, are real hyper concerned about this. Like, this is the most important thing in your life, is to have health insurance. Well, I've gone many, 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 many years where I self-insured. And that was a calculated risk on my part. I said, if anything happens, I will pay the bill. Is that a smart thing to do? Not necessarily. But I had other things that, as far as I was concerned, were more important that I paid for. And you don't necessarily have to be young to be in that situation. So if you're healthy and you know your situation much better than I do, and don't lie to yourself. And you also have to look at what your family history is. My family history generally, while there was some high blood pressure, people lived to a ripe old age and had few health problems. And here's the thing that I always tell people. Your biggest medical bills will be the last year of your life. And usually more than half will be the last 6 months. Keep that in mind. What's the problem? You don't know what that year is. It could be now. It could be 50 years from now. The best thing to do is prevention. Get a good night's sleep, exercise, eat a balanced diet. Do that, and you probably won't need the services of a doctor until you're in your 70s and in many cases into your 80s. And when you're in that situation, you're probably going to be on Medicare that does not pay 100% of the cost. So what I would tell most young people, don't worry about it. Now, there are a few people that do have medical problems, and usually chronic situations where it's a condition that you're always going to have it. And some have medical conditions that are serious. Well, if you're in that situation, you definitely should have health insurance, and it's going to cost you. You see, there's no one recommendation. That's why you have to ask yourself questions. But for most Americans, you don't have to buy health insurance. It's not the end of the world if you don't have health insurance. Let me tell you, there are probably, well, let's back up a minute. What if you're poor? You can't afford health insurance. Why? You usually don't have a job, or if you have a job, you're not making enough to buy health insurance. And that's probably upwards of 60 million Americans. Now, I'm mentioning that because why they're giving the government or the leaked numbers, we'll know later this week, and I'll update you on what the official numbers are. But apparently a large percentage of those that are enrolling on healthcare.gov, as well as I believe there are 14 state exchanges as well, one or two are not working, some are working. Most of the so-called, quote, early enrollees have been for Medicaid, and Medicaid is for people that are below the poverty line. Now, the poverty line for Medicaid was extended or expanded to 133% of the poverty line. So if you make less than 133% of the poverty line, and it depends on whether you're a one-person family, two, three, four, and you got to go look it up. But if you're below the poverty line, either for yourself or your family, you don't have to, first of all, you don't qualify for an Obamacare health insurance policy, nor do you have to pay for one, because you will be covered under Medicaid. That's the good news. And what apparently is happening is the overwhelming majority of the people that are actually signing up, complete the enrollment process, are signing up not for a health insurance policy, but for Medicaid. And I've gone over this before, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it. Now, the reason, but you need to understand this, the so-called cover, I like to call it a cover story, the rationale, the reason why we have Obamacare is supposedly that there are 30 million Americans, no illegals here, 30 million Americans that did not have health insurance. Oh my, they don't have health insurance. Isn't that terrible? Are you shaking? Are you nervous? I'm not. Because if you break that down, about 10 million of those people would have qualified for Medicaid and simply didn't fill out the paperwork. Now, you might think of one of the advantages of having Obamacare is we're going to get a lot of people signing up for Medicaid. And Medicaid is funded partly by the federal government and partly by the states. Funded. It's administered by the states. And what many states have done is not accepted that expanded definition of Medicare. Why? Why the federal government say, well, we'll pick up all the costs of this expanded Medicaid program for the first 3 years. But after the first 3 years, the states are on the hook for it. And what I suspect is happening, because of all the publicity about Obamacare and the healthcare.gov site, that many people that typically would wait until they're sick or injured to try to get on Medicaid or simply signing up early now. So that doesn't mean they bought health insurance. They're not buying health insurance. It's like applying early for Medicaid in case you have a health condition in the future that needs a doctor. So that's good news. At least you have something. The problem is you have fewer and fewer doctors that are willing to treat people that are poor. They don't treat Medicaid patients. There's some. There's some that specialize in it, but most don't. Specialists don't. Your best doctors typically don't. That doesn't mean occasionally they might not treat a Medicaid patient. They do, but their time, like everyone else, is limited. They have just so many hours in the day. Whether they work 8, 10, 12, 16 hours, they still have a limit on the hours that they work each year. And to the extent they're trying to maximize their profits, because it's a business they have to run, they want to make sure that the time they spend is with paying customers. I mean fully paid. What's called usual and customary charges are paid for by the insurance company or the individual if it's a deductible or copay. That's only common sense, folks. You know, let's say you work 3,000 hours, and many doctors do this, 3,000 hours a year. That's all the time you have. That's the equivalent of working 12-hour days, 5 days a week. That's 60 hours a week. That's fairly typical for many doctors. If that's the time you're spending, who do you want to spend it with? Paying customers. You know, I was visiting Florida And I made it very clear I was paying for it. And guess what? They want the money up front, and I paid for it up front. I wanted my eyes examined and needed to get certain tests on it. And I paid for it right there. They like that. They don't have to fill out paperwork. I wasn't a Medicaid patient. I wasn't on Medicare. I didn't have insurance. But I was a cash-paying customer. And they like that. Now, I'm trying to think. Did I actually pay cash or did I write them a check? I think I actually paid cash. And I asked them the price. I need such and such an exam, blah, 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 blah. Okay, it's this much, this much, this much. Here's the money. Please wait. Doctor saw me that day within an hour, and I was out of there. Got it done. Paying cash on the barrel. Now, many doctors are going to that type of service. It's cash. And that's a viable alternative both for individuals, families, as well as doctors. Cut out the middleman. I mean, make me very clear. It's cash only. Or some will take credit cards, some will take checks, but it's pay up front, and they'll tell you how much money you have to pay. So what I'm trying to say is you got to be careful about the numbers you're hearing, because they're not necessarily customers or clients of the insurance company that have actually enrolled in the plan. Many of them are on Medicaid, and that's coverage for people that are poor, that you don't have to pay for. So if you're in a situation where you have little or no money, and you know who you are, I'm not trying to embarrass you, that is your first and probably only choice. And go and enroll if that makes you feel better. However, what's shocking is what has the federal government done? They have eliminated all these individual plans. You can't sell them anymore. It's not like the insurance company wanted to get rid of you as a paying customer. They're in the business to sell insurance. Now, let me say something that's driving me nuts, and it needs to be said. I am real tired of this administration and this president saying to the American people, you're in substandard plans. These are terrible plans. Excuse me. I'm in Texas, but every state has a Department of Insurance, and some are more rigorous than others. But if you want to sell health insurance or life insurance or disability insurance, first, you got to get the state's approval to sell in that state, and you got to get your, in this case, health insurance plans approved. It's not junk, ladies and gentlemen, and most people know that. They're lying, and have the audacity to say, you got a piece of garbage. You got a so-called substandard plan. Where do they get off saying that? Every one of those health insurance plans have been approved by state governments. What makes the federal government think it's any better? The reason why these plans are so expensive is what the federal government has done is piled service upon service upon service, the so-called essential benefits services. That runs up the price of health insurance. And many people, including me, don't want a number of coverages that the federal government is assisting that all these plans have. That's what makes it expensive. And see, that's the scandal. The reason why people are not signing up is when they go to check out, they're finding out what the price is. Actually, they're finding out an estimated price. And it's considerably higher than, for example, if they have individual coverage, then they're paying today. And it's not just the premiums, the deductibles are much higher. So I firmly believe Obamacare is going to be a big failure, a government failure, after destroying all the existing plans, both individual small group and larger group. Now, one thing you need to understand, and this is getting the government real upset. Fortunately, especially if you work for a large company, so-called self-insured plans were exempted under this Obamacare law, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. That's the long name for it. I call it Obamacare. What that means, if you work for a very large company, yes, you still have to comply with the with some of the provisions, but you don't. You're paying the claims. Let me explain what self-insurance is. What many large companies will do, your Fortune 500, and it's not very large, it's mediums. Let's say think of it this way. Many companies with over 50 to 100 employees on up, and I mean thousands or tens of thousands of employees, they don't buy insurance. They self-insure. Why? They have a large pool of people working for them, and they will pay the claims out of their own pocket. And what many of those, not all, but what many of these large companies will do is have what's called an ASO plan, an administrative services only plan, where the an insurance company that they pick will administer the plan, take care of the paperwork and claims involved. But they go to the company for the money that pays the claims to the doctor or other health care providers or to the individual. They are exempt, and that rubs the government the wrong way. That's not fair. Excuse me. You work for a good company that takes care of its people and does a good job at it, provides excellent coverage. Forget about this substandard nonsense. That's spin, folks. That is spin. They're lying to you. They're trying to say that you have garbage. We have a better plan for you. Gee, that's nice, but I can't afford your so-called better plan, and I'm happy with what I have. You see, here's the dirty little secret. We had 30 million people, so-called uninsured. We have today over 180 million that have insurance. To take care of a really small problem, we took over the federal government, trashed and destroyed the existing health insurance industry. That's massive government intervention. Why did they do that? They want a monopoly. There are progressive Democrats, including the President of the United States, Barack Obama, but also Hillary Clinton and many others, that want the government to have a monopoly. They want single payer. And the first step to that was to destroy all existing competing plans. And the people are not happy with this. As a matter of fact, they're outraged at it. Because of the 30 million insured, there was a better way to handle it for this reason. At least 10 million would qualify for Medicaid. So you're down to about 20 million. And most of those people, the reason why, the number one reason that they did not have health insurance, they were between jobs. And many, once they got a job, guess what? They had coverage again. And about half could afford it, but elected not to pay for it. So the scope, the real scope of the problem, was you had about 10 million people that didn't have insurance. Now, because of the prolonged recession, even though we're supposedly in a recovery, I will concede there's a range. It's not a point estimate. There is probably somewhere between 10 and 15 million Americans that simply cannot afford health insurance. That's less than 10% of, at the high number, at the 15 million, that's less than 10% of all Americans that have insurance, and most of those Americans were happy with it. So we have Bill Clinton in a YouTube video that I just watched before the show saying President Obama should honor his commitment that you should keep your own plan. My point is this. These big interventionist government status. I call them bigs. Big interventionist government status should mind their own business. Leave the American people alone. Stop messing with their affairs. Mind your own business. Take a hike. How dare you insult my plan? How dare you interfere and take over 1/6 of the U.S. economy, the health insurance industry, and the providers as well? This is massive government intervention, interference into the private sector that was perfectly capable of taking care of the needs and wants of the American people. These are busybodies. These are elitists who say, we know better than you. You are too stupid to buy your own health insurance. How dare they? How dare they? And they're going to pay a rather stiff price come next November. And that's less than 12 months away. Remember, it's November 4th, 2014. I will vote every Democrat on the ticket out. And I'm not a Republican or Democrat. But any Democrat running is out of here for what they have done to the American people and the American worker in terms of health care. Clinton is right. He should honor his promise. The problem was he knew the president intentionally deceived and lied to the American people. Why? So he could get reelected to a second term. It's not hard to understand. Just think of it. Had he ran and said, I'm sorry, folks, but we got to take care of that 30 million uninsured, and you're going to have to give up your insurance plan that you're happy with, and your premiums are going to go up, your deductibles are going to go up. Do you really think you'd be reelected? I don't. But that is exactly is what's happening. And it's happening not just in the individual market. It's happening in the small group employer market as well as larger group. All plans are affected. And that's the plan. They want to destroy. They first had to destroy, eliminate from competition all existing health insurance. They haven't quite got it because a large group of very large companies and powerful companies made sure that so-called self-insured plans, where your employer pays for your claims and usually an insurance company administers the paperwork, got an exemption. Now, some people are getting a little ahead of the game and saying Obamacare will be repealed prior to the election of 2014. Maybe it will. I'm not as optimistic because this is really one of the only legacies of Barack Obama. And it's turning into a national joke, a national joke. People are laughing at him and Obamacare, and they're not happy because they're losing what they want. You're messing with people's lives, literally messing with their lives and their health care. This was done by a small group of elitists in Washington that they thought they knew best. They didn't know best. They didn't know what they were doing. They're totally incompetent. It's because if they knew what they were doing, they shouldn't have done anything or done something completely. They should have focused only on the so-called uninsured. Leave the rest alone. That was the obvious best alternative. But they couldn't do that. Why? They want single payer. That's their goal. So I no longer trust. I lost trust in this president years ago because he lies. I'm sick of hearing it. He does it every, he's still lying about this. And now they're saying, well, we might have more subsidies. You didn't need more subsidies. People were happy with what they had. You should have focused in on that 30 million. If you had, you would have quickly discovered that at least a third of them or more qualify for Medicaid. And now you could have developed a website just for them because they could sign up for Medicaid in advance. Now, the states weren't going to go along with it because they don't have the money. The biggest expense, there are two major expenses of all states today. Talk to anyone that's in state government. It's education and Medicaid. Those are the drivers, and to a certain extent, highways, but the biggies are education and Medicaid. And the states simply are not in a financial position to dramatically expand Medicaid. I got to wrap up the show. We have our 4 o'clock person coming in. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. I'll probably have a little additional comments and wrap up and details on my next show, but hopefully I won't be covering Obamacare again. Thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.